I mean, I guess the fact that I thought was interesting was that Oliver Oakes was the former high tech team principal.
Yeah.
High tech was one of the bidders for a Formula One entry last year that eventually correct. Approved Andretti, but yeah, the Andretti thing was still kind of controversial, but we'll update with more news when we get it. So what seems to be interesting is, like, could this be high tech trying to get their way to Formula One?
That's what I was about to ask, actually. Yeah.
I don't know, maybe if some technical partnership with Renault.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's like that could be interesting, which I mean, of course.
Welcome to RacePod.
Welcome back to another episode. My name's Nathan.
And I'm Jonathan.
Together, we are co-hosts of RacePod, where we talk about all things Formula One.
RacePod is the extension of Race Recap, a LinkedIn newsletter created by two F1 fans where we discuss the world of Formula One. RacePod serves as an extension to that content pillar where we would speak about various off-track events from the F1 grid, while also looking at other motorsports around the wider community.
So welcome back to another episode of RacePod. So it's the summer break, so there hasn't been much that's been going on so far. So together with us, with the team as well, we've been taking a much needed R&R after creating content for like a hectic first half of the season. So before we start the episode, John, like, you know, how have you been utilizing your summer break so far, you know, taking some time away from F1? I know we're back again with Race Week as F1 heads to Zandvoort. But yeah, how have you been using your summer break?
Yeah, I think I've been using my summer break to just take a step back from most major sports. I'm a fan of football as well. That was also on the summer break. So just take a step back, try to rediscover passions and find a life outside the world of being a frustrating Ferrari fan.
Yeah, that's true. I think for me, I mean, to be honest, when F1 started in Bahrain this season, everybody thought Max was going to dominate. And what amazing twists and turns we have in the first half. We had about, what, 7 different race winners in the first half of the season? Yeah, 7 different race winners.
Yeah,
you had Oscar Piastri, Russell, Lewis, Carlos, and then you had Max.
Carlos, Charles, Max,
Lando.
And Sainz.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's the two Ferrari drivers, the two McLaren drivers, the two Mercedes drivers, and Max.
Yeah.
Because Checo hasn't won anything.
Yeah, but it's always nice, you know, to always, you know, take some downtime to rediscover maybe old passions, maybe new passions as well. But yeah, we're definitely excited to come back for another episode of RacePod. So even though it's been a summer break and there has not been much going on, there's actually been a couple of huge news that some huge news that was happening in the world of Formula One. So without further ado, let's just get cracking and start the episode, John. So why not you take this first big low-key kind of news that was happening in Audi?
As everybody has known for a while, Audi has bought into the Sauber F1 team and are due to enter Formula One in 2026 as the official works team for the German manufacturer. It seems like it's been forever since they defended that effort, but they haven't actually done anything yet. So, yeah. So, besides signing Nico Hülkenberg, there's always been just behind-the-scenes news of their technical leadership and just people that they've hired. And then, so recently, there's been quite some big news that Audi's incoming entering the Formula One has been thrown into some disarray, as Sauber CEO Andreas Seidel and the Sauber Board of Directors Chairman Oliver Hoffmann have both left their posts. This came as quite a shock, as Andreas Seidel left his role as the McLaren team principal to become the new Sauber CEO in late 2022. Hoffmann, meanwhile, stepped down from the Audi management board to assume the chairman role in Sauber's board of directors. While that alone was shocking, then there came the bombshell news of who was to replace these two. Big replacement was then named to be ex-Ferrari team principal Matteo Binotto, who will become a dual role as chief operating officer and chief technical officer. On its own, this was already quite some big news, because this is the first time anybody heard of Binotto since he was sacked by Ferrari, for lack of a better term. So, yeah, that was quite a shock as well. And then, a couple of days later, we soon found out who will be Audi's new team principal was to be former Red Bull sporting director Jonathan Wheatley, who will leave his role at Red Bull and was expected to join the Audi team by July 2025. So, Nathan, What do you think of these changes for Audi?
Yeah, I think, you know, these are big name signings, right? Obviously, we haven't heard from Binotto ever since his time in Ferrari. You know, those were really, really, really rough days towards the end of his time over there with the Scuderia. And Jonathan Wheatley, who's also a huge name at the Red Bull camp. He's probably, if you guys don't really know him, he's probably the guy that's responsible for like the lightning quick pit stops at Red Bull. So signing Binotto on in a dual role and signing Wheatley on as team principals, it's definitely a statement to make. But it also makes you question is like, why the sudden shift, right? Like they had Stella in and Stella was making some progress. Stella and Seidel sounds very similar. So yeah, they brought Seidel in. He was making some progress. And if I'm not mistaken, it's just classic boardroom politics, you know, upper management they were looking at the numbers, they weren't really happy with the progress. So they decided to, you know, boot Seidel out, bring Binotto in. So Binotto, obviously, he was very renowned for his technical expertise, right? So hence the reason why he's helming the CEO role and chief technical officer role as well. It'll be definitely interesting to see whether he can kind of like course correct Audi as they, you know, really fully prepare their F1 campaign in 2026. And beyond, 2026, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
2026. Yeah. So that's just that. But I mean, what do you think, John? I mean, you are Tifosi, right? So obviously, you will have opinions of, you know, Binotto's performance as team principal in the Scuderia and his time at Ferrari as well. You know, he was with Schumacher and he was with Ferrari during the Brawn era as well. So do you think Binotto can actually, is the role suitable for him as well, you know, and also like the names that he's trying to like hire, starting with Wheatley?
I don't understand the nature of the dual role, because I think Binotto as the CTO makes a lot of sense. As a Tifosi, we've heard that Binotto has been there for a long time. He was part of the group that brought Ferrari's engine and power units department to be competitive in Mercedes towards the middle stages of the V6 turbo hybrid era around like 2017, 2018-ish under then Ferrari team principal Arrigo Benni. So that role suits him, I think, the CTO role. The COO role, I'm not sure. Like, I probably would have preferred maybe like somebody else so that Binotto could fully focus on that. And as well as the engine side was still being helmed by an Audi man, Adam Baker, on the Audi side, while the Sauber side is still operating on their own in Hinville. What I find interesting as well is that Audi have already hired a technical director in there. It was brought in by Andrea Seidel. It would be James Key, also an ex-McLaren man. It was shifted out during the whole reshuffle thing at McLaren. Correct. And he was brought in by Andreas Seidel. Him and, I would assume, to quite a degree, Nico Hülkenberg as well was brought in because he had a working relationship with Andreas Seidel. So I'm not sure what the confidence in the team is, because they signed up to work with Andreas Seidel, but he's no longer there. And then now, de facto, the head guy for the Audi Formula One program would be Matteo Binotto. So not sure what it is there, but the fact that it's one big ex-Ferrari guy and one pretty senior Red Bull guy in, it could work out as long as Audi gets his stuff together and makes sure that he has a good engine, a good field of operations, and I guess just improve their technical aspect and operational matters, because Sauber has not been doing well in 2024.
Let's take a look at what, you know, you have an example of Audi where, you know, things are always shifting, you know, you're really not sure, you bring in the guy, that's the project, it gets halted halfway and things changes, you know. But let's take a look at a team that has kind of prioritized stability and continuity. Of course, we're referring to the Papaya team, right? So Andrea Stella recently signed a multi-year contract extension with the Woking team, right? They're based in Woking, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
with the Woking-based team, obviously. He joined McLaren in 2015 and he was working as the head of race operations and performance director before he earned the promotion to executive director of racing in 2019. So since he took on the role of team principal in 2022, the team has progressed rapidly, right? Especially look at the progress they did in the second half of last year. And like right now, you know, they are really, really closing in the constructor championship gap to Red Bull. So yeah, it's really interesting to see that when Seidel joined in as CEO, obviously like there were several hires, right? Like the ex-McLaren dude and then Nico Hülkenberg as well due to their connection. So definitely right now, it's a little bit in the air for Audi. And even right now, like with Sauber as well, things aren't looking that great. They haven't scored a point. Operationally wise, they are really, really weak, you know, in terms of the development. They can't really develop the car to keep up with the pace of their rivals. So it's definitely interesting to see, you know, whether the grass or the foundation they're building leading into that, you know, that transitionary period, right? Is it going to work out, you know, or it's like, you know, they still got a little bit of kinks to iron out. But yeah, I mean, what do you think about Stella's new multi-year contract with McLaren? And yeah, I mean, what does this signify to their rivals? And do you generally think that McLaren can actually close the gap to Red Bull in both championships?
I would say Stella has done a great job bringing McLaren back to competitiveness, especially since the beginning of 2023, McLaren looked completely off the pace. And to a lesser extent, the early part of 2024 as well, like, they were quite behind. It seems to me like McLaren are kind of the team right now to start off slow, but then they pick up steam towards the later parts of the season. Kind of a reverse Ferrari, if you will.
Yeah.
So that's good. Like, the development is there and the team is focused. It's good that they have continuity there. I'm not so sure about the Matrix team structure thing, but then I guess it could be better than what Alpine does. So at least McLaren has some idea what they're doing. So that's good. But one thing I would say is probably McLaren need to be more decisive or firm in their decision making. I would say this more from, especially in the team orders thing, especially with what happened at the Hungarian Grand Prix, especially with what Piastri and Lando were like. Lando was just like, no, I'm ahead of the champion. I'm ahead in the championship. Like, or tell him to come closer, that kind of thing. As well as what happened previously with the British Grand Prix. Like, they were a bit caught flat-footed with strategy. So these are still like some minor things to be ironed out before they can catch Red Bull in the constructors. But they are helped a lot by Red Bull being mainly a one-car team with Checo just there. So that, the constructors, I would think it's possible. The drivers, I think, is out of the question at this point.
Oh yeah, Max. Yeah, with Max it's dominating right now at the moment.
So it's like, it's probably pretty much a foregone conclusion that Max is going to be a four-time world champion by the end of this season. But Red Bull maybe could be caught for the constructors, which for long-time Formula One fans, it would be something to see, because McLaren haven't won a Constructors' Championship since 1998.
Definitely. Yeah, but I mean, it's always an interesting dilemma whether, like, you know, is F1 a team sport, or like, does the driver make the car, or does the team make the car, right? There's so many things that needs to be in place for a team to actually win a championship, right? So while F1 has always been a team sport, the driver will always be in the limelight. But with that in mind, Haas has taken a really, really interesting approach with their driver lineup. So yeah, John, why not you go straight into this, because he has like nice ties towards Alpine, and we all know how we feel about Alpine at this point in the season anyway. So yeah, take it away.
We'll come back to Alpine in a bit, but we are talking about someone who's actually leaving Alpine. Esteban Ocon has signed on to join Haas to be the more senior driver alongside Formula 2 graduate Oli Bearman, with the Frenchman signing a multi-year deal. And Ocon now reunites with Haas team principal Ayum Komatsu, who had race engineered him to his first F1 test with Lotus all the way back in 2014, which is a decade ago by this point. So yeah, turbo hybrid era. Quite a long time by now. So this would be a first for Ocon, being the more experienced teammate in a team. Because his previous teammates were either more experienced, Sergio Perez, Fernando Alonso, Daniel Ricciardo, or kind of a similar experience level, Pierre Gasly. So this could be an opportunity to see Ocon leading the team with a young teammate and trying to show him the ropes, trying to be a wise mentor figure. But to add on to that as well, it probably also just reassures Haas to an extent, because Haas doesn't work well with two rookie drivers. We've seen what happened with Mick Schumacher and Nikita Mazepin. Yeah, nobody at Haas wants to remember that. So now they have one relatively experienced driver and one driver. So, Nathan, what do you think Ocon to Haas would be? Would he be a disruptive influence, or would he buckle down and be a calm team leader there?
I mean, if you look at Ocon's track record, and if you're a long-time Formula fan, you know well enough what we're dealing with here. But I don't know what Ocon was thinking. You know, maybe he wanted to be the lights of Fernando, or maybe he wanted to be the lights of, you know, Piastri, you know, right? Fernando left Alpine, went to Aston Martin, is doing relatively well-ish. And then after that, Piastri, you know, with the whole Alpine drama, he goes to McLaren, doing extremely well. So, you know, maybe Ocon woke up one day, you know, he was sipping his French coffee, eating his baguette, you know, and be like, you know, maybe I want to do the same thing, you know. Let's just try, you know. I'm looking at my options, right? You know, V-Cup isn't really an option. Sauber isn't really an option. Williams might be an option, but, you know, we'll reveal why that wasn't an option. So he's kind of left with Haas, right? And then Haas is just like, okay, we're getting a race winner. So, you know, why not? Let's just try and gamble. But from Haas' perspective, I cannot in any reasonable person's mind see why. And they look at Ocon and be like, you know what? You're great. We got a young rookie over here up in the rising. You know, he's going to do his best to try and impress and join Ferrari, you know. So why not? Let's just put the two and two together. I'm pretty sure nothing will come, you know, from you know, Ocon's, you know, pedigree, you know, and everything. But let's just face it, you know, I mean, like it or not, I just don't know how this is going to be a good lineup, because, you know, both drivers are trying their very best to prove themselves, and we've seen what happens when you have that kind of circumstances on track. I mean, spoiler alert, it doesn't end well, right? Flashback to Australia where, you know, Gasly and Ocon were trying to prove themselves, and look what happened. They ended up in the wall. So, yeah, I have no idea what Haas was thinking, to be honest. I mean, yes, fine.
And historically as well, like, Ocon and Perez crashed together a few times. Ocon and Alonso to an extent, but Alonso mostly was, like, too far ahead of them. I think except the second season where things fell apart and he was leaving Alpine. But then again, at this point, everyone is leaving Alpine. Even the Alpine engine division is leaving Alpine, but that's a sorry for Lebedee.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think he himself would be a disruptive influence. I do believe he means well. That's off track. On track, he's a fierce competitor, so I really have no idea how this is going to turn down.
What's the rationale of going for Ocon if they want a wiser, more experienced driver when they can just keep K-Mac or Bottas?
Yeah, exactly. And then Bottas is a 10-time race winner, yeah, right? If I'm not mistaken. He's a 10-time race winner. So I'm just like, Bottas was on the market. He's probably bored of what he's doing at Sauber-ish, you know, the whole long-term kind of thing. Pick him up, you know, he's chill, you know. I mean, he drinks coffee and, like, he's chill for the most part, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, decent move, but it could have been a lot better. But, well, Sauber now has the funniest opportunity to do something hilarious and just pick up Magnussen alongside Hulkenberg. That would be funny.
That would be really, really funny. Yeah.
Besides that, moving on, as one person leaves Alpine, it comes as no surprise that the French team is undergoing more change. Nathan, why don't you take us through the next part?
Oh my gosh. I mean, the word change, I don't know what. It's either it's the definition of Alpine or it's synonymous, or I don't know what, you know, at the start of the year, you know, when they were doing their team meeting and they're like, you know, let's just pick one word to focus for the year. Some random dude, some intern messed up and be like, let's put the word change over there, right? So they changed their technical team at the start of the season. They're going to change their driver lineup. They're going to change their engines, apparently. And then, you know, now with the news of Bruno Farming gone, now they're changing their team principle. God knows what else they're going to change. But yes, after a year of being in charge of the Alpine Formula 1 team, Bruno Farming has officially stepped down as team principal and he's being replaced by...
Credit to him, he lasted a year.
To be honest, kudos to you, Farming, for lasting a year. I mean, to be honest... Fair play to him, right? Credit where credit is due. He tried his best to make things work. But I think after the whole civil war in Monaco, like, yeah, you knew at that point, like, Ocon wasn't going to stay. It was either Ocon or Gasly. And Ocon has been with the team for, like, quite a while now. So he wanted, you know, more better opportunities. But yeah, kudos to Farming for lasting that long. and he's being replaced by Oliver Oates. So, Oliver is a former Red Bull Junior driver who will now be Alpine's third team principal in a space of 12 months. Damn. Following Otmar after that.
Otmar, the ex-Aston Martin, and Team Silverstone team. So, Otmar. Yeah, just Otmar. I can't pronounce his last name.
I cannot get his name. Like, I just, you know, it's like, it's Otmar. I don't know how to spell his, like, the other name. But yes, Otmar and Bruno Farming. Can you imagine, like, three third team principal in the span of 12 months? Holy dang. Yeah, and yeah, he was also previously the team principal for feeder series team Hightech Pulse 8. So Farming was stepped back and assumed the role with Alpine's power unit development operations at Very. So obviously this is linked to the move that they are selling off their end. They are giving up their status as a works team and they're going to convert to use the Mercedes engines.
At this point, the works engine division is like, is that still going to be a thing? Are they just going to develop engines? Or are they just going to like sit there and collect a paycheck? Which I mean, credit to you is like, that sounds fun, but
hey, I don't know, man. Like, I'm as lost as you as well. So I'm just like, the only thing I know that's constant is that there's going to be coffee and there's going to be baguette. That's it. Sorry. But yeah. So, yeah. So all of this comes amidst the ongoing question as to whether Alpine's work power unit status, as there is a heavily mooted switch to becoming a Mercedes customer. And there are also rumors to say that this switch might happen as soon as 2025. So even before switching to the engines, Mercedes might be supplying some parts to Alpine. So yeah, we'll see. So with this new switch, it is hoped that Oates will be able to focus solely on the day-to-day operations, while the new executive advisor and former Renault team boss, Flavio Briatore, will be focusing on the executive level decisions. So yeah, I mean, the number one question is, will this work? And Is anything even working at Alpine at the moment? Like I mean, if you look at it, there is a genuine question to ask. So, would this operational structure work for Alpine?
The proper question is, how long will this operational structure stay this way before they change it?
That's very true. Like, you know, they do this and after that, the very next day, just like, boom, you know, something new again. So, yeah, I mean, yeah. So, would this operational structure work? So, I guess they are trying to go, I think, since McLaren adapted that hybrid kind of structure, almost all teams, or like to extend like Ferrari and then now Alpine ones, or like every team is trying to emulate that hybrid team structure. But yeah, I guess the number one question is this going to work? I guess we all know the answer. But I think the more interesting question is, why would the works team willingly give up their status and rely on another manufacturer's power unit? That's a more interesting question to ask.
I think this one, for followers of our race recap newsletter, I have written an article based on this. It's like, just on the benefits and drawbacks on a works team status. So look out for that. But I guess it's just bewildering on why a team would give up their work status. It's just such an Alpine thing. Like, why? Like even looking back 10 years ago, around the start of the V6 turbo hybrid era, McLaren had a long established relationship with Mercedes. They gave that up, even though Mercedes was one of the best engines in 2014, they gave that up just for a works partnership with Honda. And we all know how that ended up. And then, speaking of Honda's next partner, Red Bull, when Honda left, they didn't want to be a custom engine again. They decided to set up their own power units division, and they partnered up with Ford, which I'm not sure how much Ford will actually do, but yeah, they're like, yeah, we want that chassis engine integration, we want that work status, and we want to have control of our own destiny. So why would Alpine decide, nah man, I can't design engines, and I'd rather get some from Mercedes? Like, huh?
Yeah. That's a very weird business decision. But I guess the more interesting question to ask is, like, obviously, I mean, you look at Alpine's F1 operations ever since they were Renault, right, in like 2017, 2018, like you said, the V6 turbo hybrid era, and it's been L after L after L, rebranding, pivoting, whatever. It's been miss after miss after miss, right? So hypothetically speaking, if Alpine really were to abandon its F1 project, right, maybe, you know, Alpine wants to fully focus on another championship, WEC maybe. It not like it's doing great over there, but I mean, yeah, they were trying to do some WEC campaign this year in Le Mans, and yeah.
Credit where it's due. their WEC car, gorgeous. It looks gorgeous. But they can't run for crap. I guess, the fact that I thought was interesting was that Oliver Oakes was the former high-tech team principal.
Yeah.
High-tech was one of the bidders for a Formula One entry last year.
They eventually
approved Andretti, but yeah, the Andretti thing was still kind of controversial, but we'll update with more news when we get it. So what seems to be interesting is, like, could this be high-tech trying to get their way to Formula One?
That's what I was about to ask, actually. Yeah.
I don't know, maybe if some technical partnership with Renault.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's like, that could be interesting, which, I mean, of course, we all want an 11 team on the grid, but yeah, Andretti is trying that, but yeah, that's a separate thing, but it could be interesting. And I mean, at least high-tech has some pedigree with, like, the junior series and everything, and they seem to want to compete, not like whatever Alpine is doing sometimes. Which at this point is just kind of plan L.
Yeah, that was what I was about to ask, actually. If Alpine was to actually pull out, right, that frees up the spot in the market, right? And we know that there are interested parties, right? You got Andretti, you got high-tech, and then you got, I don't know, there was some random news report that I saw that maybe Otmar is linked to, like, some F1 project. I don't know. But yeah, and then you got Gunther over there, right? He might come back if there's a project that excites him. So yeah, I mean, like, yeah, I mean, a lot of things could happen, you know. But yeah, but on a topic of a former champion team becoming a Mercedes customer team, another customer team has actually made a huge statement signing. So obviously, this is the big news that Carlos Sainz has finally made up his mind and he's joining Williams for 2025 and beyond. So yeah, Jonathan.
I mean, yeah, I think everybody has been waiting for this announcement ever since Sainz found out that he'd be losing his seat to Lewis Hamilton all the way back in pre-season. Carlos Sainz Jr. has finally announced that he'll be joining Williams for 2025 and beyond. After the long speculation, the endless back and forth, and the possible ties with Mercedes to Red Bull and everything, Sainz has finally put pen to paper and committed his future to the growth-based team. Much to the delight of Williams team principal James Vowles and a lot of the Williams stuff. Apparently, there were quite some videos going around that the Williams factory all celebrated upon finding out Carlos Sainz has signed. Maybe sucks if you were Logan Sargeant, but I guess that's how it works. So yeah, despite struggling for years, Williams has recently been on a hiring spree. Also, in addition to signing Sainz, they also made another statement signing with another ex-Alpine technical director, Matt Harmon. And just for laughs, technically, Sainz is ex-Alpine, ex-Renault for a while, because I think he spent like a season plus in like 2018 in Renault. So yeah, why not at this point? So in addition to that, so now Williams has quite a decent driving pairing, at least in my opinion. Albon and Sainz, two former Red Bull junior drivers, now in a back-market midfield team trying to climb their way up the grid. What do you think of this signing from Williams, Nathan?
Okay, I mean, let's start with Albon first, right? He's gone through an interesting character arc, right? Obviously, he was talented with Toro Rosso, got promoted to Red Bull, and he has his whole Red Bull saga. And then after that, he was about to lose his seat. And then after that, he found a new chance in Williams. So I think his time at Williams has actually really allowed him to shine, because there's less pressure. Obviously, the team is built around him in a sense, because, I mean, you can't really build a team around Sargeant. I mean, no offense to Logan, but like, yeah, it is what it is. I mean, Albon is just far more experienced. I mean, you know, the racing talks, right? So obviously, you know, Albon has built the team around him and it's really elevated his confidence. So I think putting Sainz in there, I think they're friends as well, so it helps, you know, they have a chemistry. Sainz himself is, you know, a multiple race winner. It brings him a lot of experiences from all these top teams, like McLaren, Ferrari, Renault. He was with Toro Rosso. He was teammates with Max Verstappen. So I think that itself makes for a very, like, stable driver lineup. They are both able to really contribute their experience to basically bring Williams hopefully back to the front of the grid. So what in terms of the prospects for the Williams project, I'll say if the Mercedes engines are as good as they say in 2026 and beyond, I think we might have a wild card, you know. And yeah, I think we might be in for a surprise. Obviously, yeah, Vowles has made a lot of huge signing as well, not just with signs, you know, in terms of the technical talent to really prepare their campaign for the new regulation cycle. But yeah, I mean, what do you think, John? I mean, like, obviously you must be happy that Sainz is still in Formula One, and you know, this is a long-term deal, so he will obviously have chances to leapfrog back to another team, you know, should, you know, the new rules be more favorable then. So yeah, what do you think?
I mean, all this while, I kind of expected Sainz to go with Audi. Like, I thought that this looked like a more sensible choice, but then that was before all the chaos and turmoil at Audi, before their leadership and everything. Which after that, yeah, I can see why that Sainz would prefer some stability, because Williams, for its part, even though they are midfield to backmarker team, they are quite stable. Like, you don't hear much chaos from them. They don't change their names every so often, so they are not like Toro Rosso, V-Cup, whatever they're called now. They're not LP, simple as that. And then they don't have the drive to survive memes that Haas does. So even though it's not as funny, they're at least a lot, bit more stable than that. And
so they're not really drive to survive, you know. They're more like drive to harmony. Like, it's like kindergarten like that, you know. It's just like, yeah, happy vibes, you know. Right, no pressure. Back, you know, just in the back there, if they do well, they do well. They don't do well, it's like, it's Williams, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it's all chill there. And then, like, James Bowles seems like a very intelligent guy. He's putting the steps in place. They're moving away from using Microsoft Excel, so baby steps.
Good for that.
And I mean, so yeah, it should be exciting. And I mean, Williams still are one of the top five constructors in terms of historical number of wins and championships. Like, in terms of constructors' championship, they're probably at least like third, only behind Ferrari. Like, they have like 8 or 9 constructors' championships. They even have more constructors than McLaren. So it's a very historical team. It's good to see that they're on the upward trend. And I mean, who knows, maybe in a couple of years they can strike out on their own and become a front-running team again. We haven't seen a Williams fighting in the front since like the early 2000s. So who knows, decently optimistic and with a decent driver lineup. So all power to Williams. But yeah, moving on from that, now that we've had Sainz in place for and having announced his next move, the state of the 2025 driver market is slowly coming into picture, with Sainz being in place as well as Ocon. So, Nathan, why don't you bring us through some of the remaining seats left, and why don't you give some of our predictions?
So right now, in terms of the driver signings, I think a lot of the deals and announcement that you're going to see in actually this season, it's more for 2025 and beyond. So you're not really getting like a 1 year renewal, say for say, like let's say for V-Cup, where they only renew Yuki for like a year. So right now, it's being limited to the last few seats. So we'll go with the one that are more likely settled. So rumors, actually not rumors, I think plenty reports have suggested that Alpine is most likely going with Jack Doohan because he's part of the academy as well.
Point to Alpine, please make sure that he signs a definitive contract this time. We all know what happened the last time. So make sure it's actually a contract. We don't want another.
Yeah.
I am aware that this has been confirmed without any of my permission or knowledge. Yeah, we don't need any of that. Hilarious as it is.
Yeah, yeah. We mentioned it in the previous episode as well. So you know it's really, really important. So take note, Alpine legal team. And if you need any legal advice, you know, you can always consult our resident legal expert here at Race Recap. So yeah. So Doohan is part of the academy as well. So it's more likely than not. They don't really have other options. I mean, Mick Schumacher was mentioned, but so that's because he's part of the Alpine family. So it's either between him and Doohan. But reports suggest the seat is most likely going to Doohan. So yeah, it makes sense, you know, having like that, you know, mentor and a young driver kind of like relationship in Gasly and Doohan. So that's that. And for Mercedes, I still do not understand to this day the hype behind Kimi Antonelli, but reports are suggesting that he's most likely getting their multi-year deal in Mercedes. Toto is really, really hype about this young talent. So yeah, that's that.
Is he that great? I don't see it, but
His F2 challenge is like, at the start, it took a while, right? You know, it took a while for him to really get into the groove. And only now he's kind of performing. But I still don't see, it's mostly Toto anyway. Toto kind of dubs him as the next Max Verstappen, which I still do not understand. Like, he didn't have the kind of like magic or the kind of wow factor. I mean, Verstappen came in at like what, 16, 17, got into F, like he was like really, really, really talented. And then when he got put in his first race, he won. obviously due to circumstances.
First race at Red Bull, but yeah.
First race at Red Bull and he won, obviously due to circumstances, obviously. But yeah.
Which, I mean, if you know your F1 law and history.
You know exactly what we're talking about. I'm pretty sure if you know, after those words to Toto, he'd be like, not that day again, but yes. Yeah, so Alpine and Mercedes are most likely locking in this young talent for long term. So it's going to be a multi-year deal, which leaves the most likely volatile empty seats at VCAR and State, who is going to become Audi in 2026. So for V-Cup, they locked in Yuki. So now it's only a choice, like, do you renew Daniel Ricciardo's contract or are you going to promote Lawson? Because if you don't promote Lawson, then he's going to become a free agent. And the only place that he can actually go is Audi. So I'm not sure. Yeah, there's that. So that's just the amount, like, the names that's out there. If you were the team principal of V-Cup and the team principal of State, /Audi, who will you choose and why?
Okay, I mean, I guess I'll start with VCAR. I mean, I guess the first question I would have is I'll speak to Christian Horner to see, is Yuki gonna stay here or like are you just gonna like promote Yuki and drop Checo? Which, I mean, just in case. If that's not the situation, okay, Yuki is fine. I'll probably pick Lawson because I think Ricciardo had his shot. He was a great driver back then, but I don't think he has it anymore. Like, I think after post McLaren, it just hasn't been the same for the Honey Badger. So I would pick Lawson because based on a small sample size and because he's still young, Lawson is just a shot. I think why not just give him a season, give him a few races to see what he can do. It's not like V-Carb are fighting for the championship anyway. So what's the risk there? Yeah, for Stink, I mean, there's already one seat field. It's like Hülkenberg is there. And besides the just for jokes thing of just bringing in Magnussen and bringing in, I don't know, maybe the MoneyGram sponsorship and just calling it MoneyGram Stake, why not? That would be hilarious. But I mean, a realistic thing I would think would actually be, as I think I've advocated a few times, would be Thierry Porcher, like the reserve driver. And also sometime McLaren cast off your IndyCar, if you know, you know.
Yeah, for Stick, it's a little bit hard to predict because that seat could go to anybody as well. There's one unknown name that's being thrown around in the paddock as well. So yeah, we'll see. It's obviously going to be a multi-year deal because Nico Hülkenberg signed a multi-year deal unless, like, I don't know, they want to do like a short-term thing, maybe being Porsche for a while.
What would be your options if you were to choose between, if you're the team principal of V-Cup and Stick?
Okay, to make it really quick. So for V-Cup, I think it's, I mean, if I was the team principal, hypothetically speaking, right, boot Checo down to VCAR, de-promote him. He doesn't deserve the renewal at all. Like, period. I don't think I even need to justify it. He's been in like a really, really string of poor runs recently. Take him out of the Red Bull seat, put him in VCAR there. Hey, we're doing him a favor. Like, he's still in Formula 1, you know. He's lucky enough to even be demoted and not like get like dropped immediately. But yeah, put him down to VCAR. And then either bump Ricciardo up. No, actually scratch that. Just drop Checo all in all. Like, he has his time anyway. He has been from the one long enough. Give Daniel the shot that he deserves, right? You know, like, if this dude is really of, you know, he's really as good as he is, put him with Max for one season. Let's just see if the Honey Badger still has the magic. Put Lawson in the V-Cup because, like, he deserves the seat. But for Stick, really, like, I don't know. Like, it could go anywhere. Like, it could be a wild card, you know. I would love to see Thierry Porcher actually get his shot at being in Formula 1 finally. So yeah, there's that. But I mean, it's definitely interesting to see, because with most of the signings that we have, we kind of knew slightly in advance because there was plenty of rumors around it. I think for these kind of seats, apart from Alpine and Mercedes, for Stick and V-Cup, it's a little bit volatile. Like, you're not really sure. I think we could go down towards the end of the season, don't need to find out.
Because there have been so many conflicting rumors, and especially Stick had a lot of links with Carlos Sainz before.
Oh, yeah.
Before he signed before he signed with Williams, so we don't know at this point.
So it's all just predictions in the air. A little bit of meme and whites, but yeah, it is what it is. So yeah, we are reaching almost the end of the episode, so now we only have the bite-size update. So there's not a lot of interesting bite-size update for us to review. So if this is your first time or your first time in a long time listening to this part of the episode, bite-size update is basically anything within the episode that we find interesting about Formula 1. They are not exactly newsworthy, but you know, we thought like we just like to share it, hence the word bite-size update. So yeah, Jonathan, take us through this fun fact that Oscar Piastri actually revealed during the summer break.
Yep, okay. So I guess one thing that we found out over the course of the summer break was that Oscar Piastri actually had an injury he sustained during the first half of the season. And he revealed this on social media. On X, formerly known as Twitter, Oscar Piastri posted a series of photos, with the final one being of an X-ray image which shows a clear broken rib. The photo that the X-ray is dated Monday, 8th of July at 11:12 a.m, the morning after he finished 4th at the thrilling British Grand Prix. Which, to remind you, listeners of the podcast, was actually one of McLaren's mistakes. Because at that time, at a point in the race, McLaren were running first and second. And then they fumbled the strategy pit stop, and then they finished 4th. Piastri finished 4th, even though he was left out a lap too late, and then he just fell back in dramatically after that. So part of it, I guess, can't blame him. He had a broken rib. Yeah, I mean, there was one other update, because I'm guessing it was technically a bit before the summer break, or around then also was like the recent Formula E season concluded. And they crowned a new Constructors' Champion as well as the new Drivers' Champion. Constructors' Champion is now going to be Jaguar, which, good for them. They're doing a lot better in Formula E than whatever they did in Formula 1. And then the new Drivers' Champion in Formula E, was listeners of the podcast or of Formula 1 would know, would be Pascal Wehrlein, an ex-Mercedes Junior. So, interesting. Good for him. And then, yeah, this points to note that some ex-Formula 1 drivers do find success elsewhere. So for those drivers who are not getting a seat in Formula 1, that could be a lot better. Giovinazzi won 24 Hours of Le Mans as well, so why not?
Yep, the grass could be greener on the other side. So before we cap off the episode, I think I just wanted to make this really, really funny observation. So yes, Oscar broke a rib. And that was right after the British Grand Prix. And this was right before the Hungarian Grand Prix, right? Which he won, right? Correct. So, basically, Carlos Sainz had an appendicitis surgery, won the Australian Grand Prix. Lando broke his nose, he won the Miami Grand Prix. Oscar broke his rib, won the Hungarian Grand Prix. So, drivers out there, you know, if you want tips on how to win a Grand Prix, or, you know, Marco, if you're listening to this, or any team principal who's listening to this, if you want your driver to win, yeah.
Probably Marco shouldn't listen to this, but the rest of the team principals probably are fine.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's just hilarious. I'm just like, okay, everybody that has won a Grand Prix so far has suffered some kind of injury. So, I'm just like, okay.
Just for legal reasons, for any team principal, that this is not an endorsement to go and break your driver's legs.
Oh yeah. We're not suggesting anything. This is just an observation. You know, you make do of what you want to do. Yeah.
This is just a funny joke at the inside thing. It's like, this is not a suggestion to go and break your driver's legs and then just saying, oh, everybody else got an injury and won, now it's your turn. Yeah, no, we're not suggesting that. It's just a funny thing to observe.
Yeah, but I can't imagine with the amount of like G forces and on a broken rib, oh, that must have hurt really, really bad.
Yeah, it must be insane going through that. Which I mean, I guess partly is like Hungary as a track, I guess it wasn't too fast and flowing, so I guess it's still fine, but it's definitely not easy.
Yeah, it's not like Jeddah, or she would drive on a broken rib in Jeddah, or
Spa.
Oh, yeah. So that's that. I think by that time he would have recovered. But yeah, this is just a really funny and odd observation. So yeah, that's that. So with that, we have come to the end of the episode. So thank you so much for listening to the episode. So don't forget to follow us on Spotify and drop us a review on what you actually thought about the episode. So yes, if you like any latest update, whether it's the newsletter or the podcast, follow us on LinkedIn at Race Recap. So yeah, till then, once again, I'm Nathan.
And I'm Jonathan.
And stay safe, and I'll see you in the next episode.